This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Join Justin Townsend and the Harvesting Nature crew as they explore the world of cooking wild fish and game while sharing recipes, tips, tricks, and lessons learned from their pursuit of wild food. We sure hope you ate before the show, because you're going to leave hungry. This is the Wild Fish and Game Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Harvesting Nature's Wild Fish and Game Podcast. Got your host here, Justin Townsend, and tonight, special episode, bringing it to you number two from my travels up in the great state of Oklahoma, my home state, many of you know, and tonight I'm sitting at the table with two very special guests. I will let them introduce themselves, but I'll tell you, they've been on the podcast before, and we'll talk about that in a minute, but I'll let Emily introduce herself first.
Well, I'm Emily. And we have Ryan here as well, and we're from The Way We Hunt.
Hey, guys. Glad to be on the show again. Had a great time last time. Looking forward to be on it again. No, I heard it.
Drinking beer out of a straw.
I live in.
I can't even take myself seriously right now.
Mama said I wouldn't make it.
All right, so... sorry, Ryan. Go ahead.
No. Hey, Ryan here, guys. Glad to be back on the show. We were on, what, 2 months ago?
A half ago? October.
That was more than 2 months ago. lots going on, and we're happy to have you here. Happy to have you in the kitchen, so to speak. We'll get into that later, but yeah. Also from The Way We Hunt, just me and Emily and I.
The pair of yous.
The pair of us.
And I made a guest appearance tonight.
You did.
Which I'm pretty excited about. And I get a fancy new Way We Hunt hat, which you should look forward to on. What's the best way for them to get in contact you? If they're like, we really like your hats, which they should, because really awesome hats.
So probably right now, Facebook, honestly, is probably the best way.
Or Instagram.
Yeah, Facebook
or Instagram. Yeah. And we'll tag them in the show notes so you have a good way to contact them. But, so we last chatted in October, it's now January, so some time has gone by. We talked about offals, not like awful things, but the insides of animals. And we kind of made a commitment to try to do better in the upcoming hunting season to retain pieces. The wobbly bits, as Hank Shaw said. I just re-listened that episode today when I edited the our top 10 2020 picks, which if you have a chance, go back and listen to those segments. But in talking about the wobbly bits, we made that commitment, as I mentioned, and I saved some stuff. So I did I brought back two hearts, two antelope hearts, two antelope livers, and an antelope tongue from Wyoming. And of that, I have left one antelope heart and an antelope tongue. I cooked one liver in a failed attempt, very bad failed attempt, at pate, which, I don't know, I think my problem with it was I didn't soak it in anything, and I just tried to go straight into the pate, which may or may not have been a mistake because I was skeptic of soaking, which then spurred my whole spiral of a research project that is the article, How to Soak Venison Livers, which I used milk, salt water, and lemon water. And since then, after publishing that article, I learned that there's many people around the world that are soaking livers in different ways in order to make them more enjoyable. So I've learned a lot.
Well, meat in particular.
Yep.
Like, lots of people do a salt water brine, I guess you would call it a brine, on meats, and milk. I mean, all the time, mm-hmm. You see people soak in buttermilk. So that article was extremely interesting. I read that.
Second article you've read of mine.
It's only the second article I read of yours. It was a good article. It was very interesting.
Thank you.
Learned a lot.
It was a lot of hands-on research. I tried it. Zoe tried it, my daughter. Afterwards, I learned that she told my wife in a car ride that she did not enjoy any of the livers. And she's like, please tell daddy not to make that again for me. So it's fair, though. Everybody has their taste in livers. I'm not 100% sold. I do like pate and things like that, but I'm going to have to play around with the recipes a little more to tune up. I guess that's a word.
Level up.
To level up my pate recipe before I try it again.
Do you think it was just the antelope in particular? Or do you think it's liver in general?
It could have been the antelope in particular because I don't know. I mixed up the ones I had. Both the livers were from older does. So that could have been a contributing factor because I did learn in my research that older animals will bring on stronger flavors. And it makes perfect sense when you think about it because the liver being a filter for the blood, that it's essentially the longer you use a filter in like your sink, the more mineral deposits and things it's going to pull out. So in theory, why wouldn't the liver contain more things, off-putting flavors? But I'm going to give it a go again. I may try it with another type of liver before I dive back to antelope because I was a little off-put by it. But I'm not going to wipe it off the menu. Just put it on the back shelf till later. But the heart I was pretty excited about. I did a venison heart hash with it, and that one was really good because I took the potatoes and I parboiled them. So for those that may not know the technical term for parboiling, you're essentially going to basically like halfway boil them. So I cut them into small cubes, halfway boiled them, drained them, let them all the water rinse off, and I let them sit in the fridge uncovered overnight because that sucks all the moisture off of them. And then when I crisp them up the next day with little chunks of the venison heart, and I use some of the Traeger prime rib seasoning, which has a lot of like rosemary and super like meaty flavors, so it turned out really well. It was so good. It was kind of like a Colorado omelet minus the egg.
That makes sense because I made a heart hash as well, but I didn't parboil the potatoes. I did it all kind of. I did the potatoes first, then added in. Well, no, I think I did the heart first, set it aside, then I did the potatoes for a little bit, added the egg in, and then re-added the heart to it, so it would finish cooking the heart. And the potatoes were a little not done.
Mm.
I think it still turned out good, but if I was going to do it again, that makes sense, kind of pre-boiling the potatoes so they weren't so, I don't know, that starchy flavor.
Yep. Actually, now that I think about it, did I parboil the potatoes? I may have soaked them overnight in water, which will also take out the starch. Mm. I'll have to double check the recipe. But the recipe, everything we talked about tonight, recipe links, hat links, all those things will be in the show notes. So you can go back and click that. And I may or may not be wrong, but I'm sure there's fact checkers out there that will tell me I'm wrong for my own recipe. But that's okay. Either of the two methods will take out that starch.
I kind of like the parboiling idea,
yeah,
though, because that makes a whole lot more sense than the way I did it.
But. Yeah, and then you can actually it'll be a quicker cook in the end. So,
makes a hearty breakfast.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I see what you did there. So outside Heart Hash, did you guys dabble? Did you guys collect any organ meats?
Yeah, so we actually got several hearts. We went on a hunt in Texas with some friends. We helped teach a long-range shooting school, and one of our instructors brought his son, who had never hunted before, and we took a bunch of the meat or a bunch of the hearts from the animals that they harvested, brought them home, and a few of the livers that were salvageable, and then the just totally went blank. That covers the organs.
Call fat.
The call fat, yes. Yeah. We got the call fat off of, I don't remember what it was.
We got the call fat off of a really big sow.
Mm-hmm.
Wild hog.
Yeah, it was really nice looking.
Yep. An axis or two axis. Axis and a half, because one was kind of meh.
That's fair.
Yeah, there was not a lot left of it. And then the white-tailed doe, but that was from a different hunt. That was Ricky's hunt. That was the best call fat I've ever seen on.
I've never seen so much fat on a deer before. So we live in Oklahoma, and there was a deer that was harvested on a place that we have access to in central Oklahoma, and it was the fattiest deer I had ever seen in my life this year. I don't know why, but she had the thickest fat everywhere.
Not pregnant, and probably 2.5 inches of fat everywhere.
Insane.
Wow. That's a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, when you butchered her, she looked like a cow.
Did you just the call fat, or did you guys keep the call fat, or any of the other fat?
No, we kept. No, that's all we kept, because we haven't really dabbled much into the other fat. But I mean, it was crazy.
So we're planning a wild game fat episode. Where we're talking about sort of like rendering and which fats are good, which fats are not, and how to save fat. So I would say stay tuned for that. But I'm curious. I've been practicing on fat from beef brisket to kind of render it down, but yeah, none of the antelope I got are all super lean.
Yeah, we initially actually saved a lot of it, and we bailed on it when it came time to processing.
Yeah.
We had him and his daughter come here, and we taught her for the first time and him for the second or third, but how to process a deer, how to break it down, how to grind it, and we had been going for like 6 hours, 7 hours, and by the time it got to the fat, we were like,
we're over it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm excited to see what's to come of that and what's to come of your guys, the organ meats you save. It's pretty good. So all in all, we've stayed on to our commitment.
Yes.
So it should be interesting to see what we can come up with.
I think we just took a different spin on it, not intentionally this year. We hosted a couple of those veterans hunts, and just from questions that were asked from other people, it led us to teaching people about offals. About keeping. So it was more about, hey, yeah, you can use that. Oh, well, how do you use it? Oh, well, take it out of the, you know, the sack, and here's how you know. Mm-hmm. So I think it was more, we stuck to the guns, but it was more of an instructional aspect, unintendedly.
That's good.
Yeah, it was kind of fun.
Kind of like spread the word.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah.
So, and I think getting people more comfortable with eating those things is really good. So, awesome. And then, let's see. We wanted to talk about sous vide.
We did.
Right? Water circulators, some people know them as. Basically, an apparatus, either like a wand-type device or a standalone unit, which I have the standalone unit. You guys have the wand device with the big tub. It basically slow cooks in water, maintaining a constant temperature, whatever item you put in there. And so you're usually going to put it in a sealed bag, either like vacuum sealed, Ziploc bags, if you squeeze all the air out of it, anything like that, to cook meat or vegetables or whatever. I've seen people cook eggs in them. People swear by the perfect poached egg come from.
I've seen that, yeah.
Yeah.
That's one of the recipes I want to try. And then I see a lot of recipes on like cheesecake.
Really?
Yes.
Cheesecake?
Yes. So like in jars.
Oh, in jars. Oh, okay. I could see that. You lost me for a second. I was picturing like a cheesecake like in a Ziploc bag sideways.
Squeeze it out.
I'm like,
Yeah, because technically what sous vide is, the translation is under vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
So a big fluffy cheesecake under vacuum, I don't think would be fluffy. No,
I don't think so. But I could see it in jars.
Yep.
That would be cool.
And then I've seen a lot of people do like blueberry vodka infused stuff. So they do like fruit infused alcohol in the sous vide.
That's pretty cool.
Also in jars.
So they're basically pasteurizing it.
Mm-hmm. I see, because they're bringing they're not bringing the alcohol to temp so that it would burn off, mm-hmm. but it's enough that it'll pull the extract out of the fruit into the alcohol. Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, that'd be hard to do on a stove without like hitting like the, maybe not a flash point, but a point where you're burning off alcohol.
Yeah, I think just that, it's, that consistent temperature would be a hard thing to
maintain. Well, and because it's enclosed.
Oh, there's that.
Because if you say, like, if you think about how you produce alcohol, you have the alcohol there, and then you condense it.
Sure.
And so as that alcohol vapor leaks off, you're essentially making more potent alcohol. But since it's enclosed, I wouldn't want to overheat it, though. You would end up with, like, a bomb.
Yeah, a bunch of little mini stills in your sous vide machine.
Yeah. But either way, sous vide is great for wild game because it allows you to maintain that slow, low cooking, but also retains the moisture in the meat, so you're not going to lose a lot in the cooking process because it's all contained in one. And I think that's probably the biggest thing. Like, you can add a lot of stuff to it, too.
Yep.
So you can put your sauces, your marinades. Like, you can literally vacuum seal a marinade or a soup or whatever you want inside there, put it in the fridge, let it set for a couple days, and then put it in the sous vide and let it cook. And it's just going to be, the flavor is going to be even more infused.
Yeah, and what, I mean, this was kind of a, this was a Christmas gift for Emily, but, you know, researching it after the fact, and it's another thing, it allows a lot more leeway for those people that don't want to babysit their food.
Mm-hmm.
So you can throw a piece of wild game or steak or whatever, and let's say you set it at 130. It's never going over 130. So it buys you some time. If you need to run out to the store, if you need to do something, and you're not going to pull it off at exactly 2 hours, if you leave it in there for an extra half hour, extra 40, you're okay.
Yep.
It changes maybe some of the consistency. I've read a lot and experimented a little bit.
Like fish. I think you can screw the fish up by doing that.
It can turn it more mushy a little bit, but it's always medium rare or medium well or whatever the temperature you set, you can never go over that. You just cook it at that temperature for longer, which changes the consistency, but not the doneness. So we've done a couple of those experiments, and it's really weird to leave a steak in there for like 3 or 4 hours. And you're just thinking, I'm burning the heck out of this
thing.
You
pull it off, reverse sear it, and you're like, wow, this is great.
That was amazing. Yes, exactly.
We did during Thanksgiving. We actually sous vide duck breast.
Nice.
And I did like a great recipe that I always go to. It's like a pumpkin cream sauce with gnocchi and seared duck breast. But we did a reverse sear. We put the duck breast in the sous vide for like 2 hours and then pulled them off and seared them. And oh my gosh. So good.
Which I feel like is probably the only way that you can eat duck breast. It's not bad.
You're not a duck fan?
No. Remember on the awful thing we were talking about?
I do.
Not a fan.
You would have liked it. So last night we recorded and we did a taste test of 3 different duck. I cooked them the same way. But so I was hunting with 2 of my cousins and one of their friend. And he does not like to eat shoveler.
Okay. Makes sense.
But... So I always take that cue as like, there's probably a way I can cook it that you're going to like it. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we did the 3 taste tests. So I put them in the smoker, red wine in the bottom, season them, salt and pepper, hit a splash of red wine vinegar. In addition to that, coated them in olive oil, put them in the Traeger, cooked them 15, 20 minutes covered, 15, 20 minutes uncovered, and then we did a taste test. Mm-hmm. And we had... Out of all the 3, he liked the shoveler the best.
Really?
Yeah. So I was pretty stoked about that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, made me happy. I also like the shoveler the best, too. Not really like a fishy taste or a weird taste of the bottom of the pond.
Of mud.
Of mud, yeah. No, it was good. So With that said, SUV's way to go. I like it.
We've had ours for, well, since Christmas, and we've cooked quite a bit on it. It hasn't left the kitchen. It's not been that appliance that you use once and it gets put back in the box. It's just, oh, we want to do SUV tomorrow.
Well, I mean, it's
or later today.
Yeah, it's easy to do. So, I know you guys have been making some great videos too with it. What was the first thing you cooked out of it?
Well, we did just steak, just to try, just some steak that my parents brought down for Christmas. It was just beef steak, mm-hmm. and we tried it for the first time, and it was good. They were thinner steaks, so I'm the only one in my family that likes rare. So mine was definitely not rare because everybody else wanted a more well-done steak. But, I mean, I was sold on it after that.
How did you guys do it? Did you just put the steak in there? Did you put seasoning in with it?
I think we just did salt, pepper, and garlic powder.
That was it? Yeah.
Yep, that was
just kept it real simple.
And nice. Then a flamethrower at the end.
Because life.
You know.
Yeah.
You
need everybody needs a flamethrower.
Yeah. To sear it. And then after that... That's the only non-wild game we've done in it. And that was the first one that we tried. And then after that, we did some backstrap. And
I think the very next thing was a test run for a video that we just released. But
that's right.
I got some store-bought tikka masala from a recommendation from a friend of mine down in Houston. And so I wanted to taste kind of what the canned tastes like first. So we sous vide some. We mixed basically some elk and axis we had and cubed it up. And actually I just dumped it was a complete experiment. I dumped the entire bag of tiki masala into the
jar, into the bag.
Yeah, the whole, just dumped it right into the bag, did the water immersion. We don't have a what's the big vacuum sealer, chamber seal. We don't have a
chamber. Yeah,
we don't have a chamber sealer, so it's kind of hard to do liquid. So we just did the Ziploc water immersion, you know, dip it down in there and
yep.
burps all squeeze the water out
there. Yeah,
and we just cooked that for like 3 hours at 130 degrees with the sauce in it, everything, nothing else. And it was off the charts phenomenal. The only thing that wasn't, it was just 130 degrees sounds hot, but once you plate that, it's not super hot. So we just heated it up real quick, but it was fantastic.
Nice.
And elk and the axis were tender as it was, because I believe they were probably, I think, backstrap chunks that we had left over, mm-hmm. and we just stuck them in there, so they were already tender, but then the sous vide just made them stupid. They just fall apart in your mouth.
Oh man, that sounds great. Yeah. I'm hungry all over again.
Yeah, that was the second thing, and I think that may have been the next day. So I think we opened it, cooked the steaks, and I think the next day made that.
Okay.
So there wasn't a long draw in there. Did you do...
How did you like the canned tiki masala?
I really enjoyed it. It reminded me more of what I think I was used to. I hadn't had it in a while from a real authentic restaurant. Really strong cumin flavor, really strong garam masala flavor. Kind of a thinner sauce.
Mm-hmm.
So there wasn't a lot of soupiness left to it. It was just more coated on the meat itself, which was not bad. It was very, very good. But then we ended up taking it a step further in a video we put out. We actually made our own, and compared the two, but they were both phenomenal. I had a different flavor the way we did it the first time though, with the elk and the axis, because the meat cooked in with the masala.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of those juices were intertwined in there. So it was what basically the broth and stuff from the meat cooking mixed in. So it gave it a really, really unique flavor that was even different from the video we just put out, where we tested the jar and our homemade stuff. This was even different than that.
Oh wow! Okay,
so it was something I didn't even think about, and I was like, "Oh yeah, it's the broth in there mixing with it." So
yep, I could see that. What did you think of it, Jim?
I liked it, and then when we, I think you guys are actually going to feature our recipe on your website at mm-hmm. the end of January, and I've had maybe tikka masala like one time. Almost 10 years ago. So I like what Ryan was saying, when we made the homemade stuff, it was a little thinner, I guess, soupier version than the stuff that came out of the jar. So like the flavor that came out of the jar, but like the consistency of our homemade stuff. But, you know, we just kind of made up the homemade stuff, and you know, we can tweak it later and add more cumin or more, you know, anything at that point.
Yeah.
And you know, you can, if you don't like the soupier version, all you do is just simmer it longer to kind of render down that.
We added coconut milk to the end of it, and you could even cut down on that and simmer it longer, and it's gonna thicken up on you. So mm-hmm. It was definitely our version was definitely more vegetable based, vegetable-y. It was a lot fresher consistency to it. The taste, the smell, the aroma that came off of it was definitely a lot more fresh.
So. Or you could add a cornstarch or tapioca starch to it mm-hmm. to thicken it up.
Thicken it up at the end. Yeah. Yep. That's what I was thinking about too.
But Ryan said that he really liked kind of that more thin consistency that it came up with the ones that we made. He says he thinks it's more traditional.
I think it's more traditional. I mean, every place that I've ever been that's had tiki masala, it was traditional. It's been more of more watery based.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, I can get a spoonful of it along with the meat. So
yep.
I really, really enjoyed that.
It's kind of think of it like a soup and a sauce.
Sure.
One, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. So what's the next thing you guys cooked after the tiki masala?
Did you sous vide any of the bear or the hog for your sausage balls?
No.
Okay, so then it would be wild hog pork chops.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I just did a real basic salt, pepper.
Ooh, those look good.
Olive oil, garlic. I don't know if they're... and then I put rosemary, fresh rosemary. So our garden made a lot of rosemary this year, and right before the freeze, I harvested all of it and just threw it in the freezer. And so I just have a bag of fresh rosemary in there that we've been using quite a bit of in the off season. And Ryan's pork chops turned out super tender, and my pork chops were a lot more tough, and I don't know why. Hmm. They were cooked exactly the same, two different bags, but cooked exactly the same. So I don't know if it was just because it was just a...
Different animal?
Nope, they were the same animal.
Different... portions.
Different portion of the back strap.
I was about to say fore or aft.
Fore or aft of the pig.
Yeah.
The front portion or the back portion are unknown.
The port and the aft.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really weird because I was actually editing a video. She hands me mine. I was like, wow, this is so good. She's a little tough. Kind of looked at her like, you're crazy. And so I had her try mine. She was like, no, it's completely different than I tried the one she had. And it was.
Huh.
Yeah, it was super bizarre.
It wasn't tough.
No, definitely not tough. I mean, but still was not what I had experienced with us cooking sous vide up to that point. So I was a little surprised. But I don't know. I guess it's just something that happens with wild game, you know, is what it is. But it still had, I mean, gosh, it was great flavor.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was pretty off the charts good.
And then the turkey that we did with the tikka masala, because I guess chicken is the normal thing that you do with tikka masala.
I think so.
It's more traditional, yeah.
Yeah, so we used turkey breast from a turkey that I harvested back in the spring.
Ooh.
And, I mean, you didn't even need the tikka masala to go with it. I mean, it was the most amazing thing. So we did the sous vide with the turkey breast, and then we put it on our Rectech for an hour. And the broth I had made inside the bag, I basted it every 15 minutes for an hour on the Rectech on the low setting with rosemary. And, I was a little concerned because it's, you know, it's wild game,
mm-hmm.
that it was going to be too tough. And it definitely was anything but. It was probably, we're probably never going to do turkey breast again any different than in sous vide and then on the smoker.
Yeah, that was a game changer. We'll be doing that for Thanksgiving for other people. I mean, it was crazy good.
Did you use the rosemary's like the brushed baste?
No, so I had put butter and rosemary and just salt in the bag, and then once we pulled it out of the sous vide, I put it on the Rectech, and I left the rosemary on the breasts, just like kind of in a cross or whatnot, and I just took a basting brush and just basted it over the top of it, so I left the rosemary on the turkey breast the entire time.
You've seen a lot of people use the rosemary as the brush.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But that's a very popular thing to do.
It's a nice visual.
Yep. Especially if you tie it, all the sprigs together,
yeah.
Get a little broom.
Looks super nice.
Yep.
But I wanted to leave the rosemary on it
yeah.
where it was. And yeah, it turned out
that's
so
perfect.
Good.
Yeah, probably will never do a turkey breast if we're just doing that differently, or if you just want that, the flavor on it was so good and you could taste it even when it was mixed in with the tikka masala. It was unreal.
I'm gonna have to try it that way. That sounds really good.
Yeah, super tender for wild turkey. A lot of people complain that wild turkey, you know, gets dried out and mm-hmm. stuff. This was as tender, or if not more tender than a store-bought one, in my opinion. When we've done both, and this was, it was way good.
So many people listening to this would think we're like selling the sous vide. But any downsides you've noticed? Anything?
Well, it's not the end all be all to everything. So I mean, like, we were watching something about brisket,
mm-hmm.
and we were watching a guy, and he did brisket traditional way, and he did it sous vide way, and the brisket sous vide kind of turned it into almost a steak,
mm-hmm.
versus what a traditional brisket on a smoker would be. So if you want that traditional way of cooking a brisket, then you still need to stick with the smoker. You don't need to sous vide it. But if you want to take a brisket and you want to turn it into a steak, then do it sous vide. So, I mean, it completely changed the flavor of the brisket.
Oh, man, I wonder. Yeah, because you're losing that fat.
And you're not rendering the fat. The fat's just hey, I'm just warm now.
Hey, I'm here.
I think another big thing that people need to be prepared for, and some people it's not, when you cook something sous vide and you pull it out, it is cooked to temperature.
Mm-hmm.
The char marks and the things that you see on a grill are not there, and it's very off-putting. You can look at a steak.
We saw that tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Gator tail is not a visually
appealing
item when you pull it out of sous vide.
It looked like a big fillet of cod.
Yeah. It did.
Yeah. I was like, oh.
I mean, the steaks are gray usually when they come out. They look like they've been decomposing on your counter for a week. And
microwave steaks.
Yeah, absolutely. So you got to be kind of prepared for that. There is obviously the space side of it. You know, they do take up some room. If you want to get one of the, ours is, I think, the pro model of the brand we've got, but I think it's a 1,000 or 1,200 watt item. So you're running a 1,200 watt item for, you know, 4, 5, 6 hours, mm-hmm. depending on what you're cooking. So there's electricity. So there are some drawbacks to it. It is very easy to use, but then again, there's a finishing step always, usually a searing process, something like that. So it's not necessarily a one and done. It's just a different way of doing it. And if you enjoy cooking, if you want to put some time into it, then yeah, I think it's a cool move.
And you will need a vacuum sealer if you're not putting wet ingredients in there. So, I mean, I guess you could always do the water immersion always, but if you're doing like a dry rub on something, then the vacuum sealer is the way to go. So once you buy the sous vide, then there's another expense that you're looking at.
Yep.
Yeah, that's true. My buddy for the space saving, he has just the wand, but he just uses like a stock pot mm-hmm. that he already has. So that's kind of it. Mine's like a whole inline system. So it's essentially like a stainless steel box with everything already built into it. And you pour the water inside of it and it kind of regulates the temp. So no need for a wand, but it doesn't circulate the water. It just brings the water to that temp. So gotcha. There's a heating element in the bottom. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's different.
That brings up people, a lot of times you have to make sure whatever you're using stays underwater. That's a whole other thing. So there's usually a clip involved.
Yep.
I mean, you start putting stuff in, it starts floating to the surface. And you're like, well, that's not supposed to happen.
Racks and clips and...
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. So,
but technically, if you get the air out of it, like, it most times sinks.
I've seen people use coolers.
Oh, yeah.
Especially doing big things like whole pigs, stuff like that. They'll use coolers and stick several sous vide wands down in there or something. But, I mean, you can think a cooler's going to keep...
We'll keep a good temperature.
Yeah, absolutely. Some people use briskets like that, too.
There's a lot. And even price range. I mean, you can get some in the lower hundreds. You can get some off-brand ones below 100. You can go all the way, you know, $200, $300, $400, $500. I think the ones you guys have, you have the Nova, right?
Yeah.
It has the app.
Yes.
I think that's a cool feature. Mine doesn't have that. It's just a box.
it's definitely got some tech whistles and bells on there. If you like the tech stuff, you can monitor it from away from the house even. So that's kind of handy.
Oh, so mine's a sous vide oven.
Oh,
and then you have an immersion circulator. That's what you guys have.
Gotcha. Just a little magic.
Yeah. Poof. Harry Potter.
That's right. And it does. And the one we have, it says it will accommodate a lot of different pots and pans, or not pans, but pot sizes and so forth. So.
Yep. And there are some restrictions on those sizes too. So be careful if you are looking for one. Be sure you're choosing something that's within the size that you want.
I think ours is 16 liters of water, something around that.
Yeah.
I remember the first time, I was telling you all this earlier, but I remember the first time I ever saw a sous vide machine or something similar. It was when I was working in San Diego in the kitchens, and we came in, and this was like 2010, and we were using it for lobster tails. And it was like a very forward thinking thing to do, because that's the only thing we used for the kitchen.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Yeah, so sous vide, I think it's pretty good. Do you guys have any other recipes that you've done since then?
Because I just did some baby back ribs. That was another non-wild game recipe that we tried, because I just wanted to try ribs, because I had never personally cooked ribs. Ryan always does the ribs, and he was afraid that if we did wild game ribs that it wouldn't be that good, or that it might kind of be a waste of time because there's hardly no meat on them.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah?
Wild game ribs.
They're fantastic, but they are a lot of work for a little payout.
You like to fry them?
Oh, yeah.
So I latched on to Meat Eater's method of doing it out of the Meat Eater cookbook. And crock pot, 6 to 8 hours. I put beer in the bottom, though, and then I rub them down. They do it a little different, but I put beer in the bottom, and I rub them down with a spice, 6 hours in there, and then put them on the grill, high heat, sear, barbecue sauce, sear again. That's my favorite way. But nice.
These ribs turned out.
Yeah,
you're
getting this much meat. Yeah.
Unless you leave the flap, like,
oh yeah,
the side flap on there, then you get, you know, another half inch.
But these ribs were phenomenal, because I did them sous vide. I don't remember. I think like 145 for 14 hours. And then I pulled them out and I put them on the Rec-Tec for 2 hours, maybe.
Smoke them.
Yeah, smoked them. And I took just a barbecue sauce and just kept basting them. And it turned out fantastic.
Sounds good.
Sorry. Mouth noises.
That's all right. I just did the barbecue sauce.
That sounds good.
It fits in line.
Throat.
Oh. Fits in line with our new podcast intro, which is like, it tells a story in the first few seconds, but there's no words. It's just all audio. And so it's noises. So go back and listen to it. It's like ducks honking, a shotgun, fire, then a splash, an over-exaggerated like sploosh, which I laugh. It makes me laugh every time I hear it. And then it's like somebody putting a pot. Oh, wow. Somebody putting a pot on the pan. And then a pot on a pan. Somebody putting a pan on the stove.
Yeah. Sizzling noises.
Gas.
Yeah.
And then it goes into the whole spiel.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty good. I'll show you guys after this. But yeah, it's great. Go back and re-listen to it if you haven't. I'm sure you heard it if you started this episode, because we launched it on the first episode of 2021. Yeah, there we go. But I don't know why we got down there. Thought it was a good time to talk about the podcast intro.
There you go.
But either way. So, man, there's a lot of stuff for sous vide. Mm-hmm. It's good, though.
Yeah, it's I'm sure we'll, right now we're just leaning into it pretty hard just because it's new and it's fun. And we're kind of experimenting, but I think we'll just use that. And it's going to eventually find its way around to just kind of working its way into our normal cooking routine. And it won't be an everyday thing like right now. It kind of is. But it'll come around to where we're going to pick and choose the best parts about that and utilize it the best way, I think.
Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
I just want to say that, you know, because our recipes, we want to make sure that anybody can make our stuff. So I know doing sous vide is not in everybody's wheelhouse or budgets. So, you know, we'll do some stuff sous vide, but we're going to continue our traditional way of cooking to make it where everybody can make our stuff.
Like three ingredient meals.
Yes.
Three ingredient meals. Hint, hint.
Spoiler alert.
So I did, speaking of second spoiler alert, I did a dove, Peking dove. So I took all the sauce you do for like a Peking duck. I did a lot of research on this to figure out there's a lot of traditional aspects to like Peking duck that I tried to impart in a Peking dove recipe. Essentially, I put the dove with all the sauces in the sous vide and cooked it till the dove were done, almost done. And then pulled them off, put them on the grill, gave them a nice sear, and it really retained so much flavor. It was good with some like pickled vegetables. That recipe I have live, so that'll be on the show notes too.
I do like Peking meals though.
Yeah,
that sounds good.
Yeah. So tonight though, in this awesome night of being in Oklahoma, I helped you guys prepare a sous vide recipe. Mm-hmm. You want to talk about it?
Yeah, well, you pretty much did most of it.
Well, I did the chopping. You guys did the glamorous part of, like, here's everything. I just chopped vegetables. But no.
We made a sous vide alligator salad.
That's it.
Yeah, which was insane. And actually really, really good.
Really good.
So we gotta break it down, because a sous vide alligator salad...
Sounds disgusting.
I picture like salad and alligator in the sous vide. But no, it's like I guess you guys.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So we took just a little over a pound of alligator tail that we had had back, and we sous vide it for 3 hours, I believe at 145 degrees.
134.
Ooh, wow, I was way off. 134 degrees for 3 hours. Just added salt, pepper, olive oil, and garlic to it, and did a water immersion in it. Made it super tender. And then the rest of the recipe was super simple. It was just celery, and a Honeycrisp apple. Let's see. Walnuts that we toasted, a zest of a lemon, Dijon mustard, curry powder, mayonnaise. Cumin and scallions. That was it. And we chopped all those ingredients up, mixed it together, chopped it up with the alligator, and it made a salad. And then Justin made the... Gosh.
Words are hard.
I know. I just totally went blank.
Collard greens.
Collard green.
Which my daughter said was okay.
Yeah.
It was the onions.
She didn't like the onions.
Yeah, the onions. Like.
Yeah, and he made collard greens for the side.
Now, I'll tell you, on the alligator salad, the way the ingredients came together, I know there wasn't, and I'm still hanging on to it, I know there wasn't ginger in there, but the way I don't know if it was the cumin and the apple mixed together or something, it was just a really light refresh. I wouldn't have never guessed it was alligator. If I didn't know it was in there, didn't watch you cook it, didn't watch you chop it up, I wouldn't have said alligator.
It was, the curry powder. Could have had some ginger in it.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I think that was it. And it maybe just popped when it mixed with probably the lemon, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it was super good though.
And very simple, and took like no time. I mean,
it took longer to film than it did to cook. I mean,
yeah.
I mean,
but it was good though. I really liked it. My wife tried alligator for the first time, which I'm pretty stoked about.
Your daughter seemed to like it.
She liked it a lot. Yeah, she likes the fact that it's wild. One, two, it's alligator, which she's never had, so she's pretty interesting.
Cool factor there.
Yeah.
And it's a different way to cook alligator. It's not the traditional way of cooking alligator.
Yeah, with the bites.
Yep.
So we're definitely trying to move away from the
traditional ways of cooking.
Yeah. Which follows up to our second item of the night that we cooked, which don't know how we ended up on it, but we did. Mm-hmm. I think I made mention, it was like, I have squirrel, and you're like, oh yeah, I got dove too. And I was like, cool, we can do a dove. I remember a venture up to one of the Florida wildlife management areas where we were hunting dove and only shot like one or two, and took the dove breast the meat and put them inside croissant dough, made like a little fluffy pastry croissant and cooked it in the Dutch oven over the campfire. And I was like, we could do that. That should be pretty simple. We can put it on the smoker and, you know, do something with it. And I was like, what about like a mini beef Wellington, but like a dove Wellington? And they kind of spawned this whole idea of wow. So that's what we ended up with the croissant dough. So just like over the counter.
Those tags are hard to get this time of year.
I need a script for that special croissant dough.
They were left over.
just regular pre-made croissant dough like you get in the biscuit aisle. I guess that's a place.
I think it's a place.
Yeah.
Definitely a section.
Yeah. So that, and we took the dove breast meat and coated it with stone ground mustard. You could really use any mustard. Yellow if you want. I'd probably do like a German sweet mustard, I think would be good too. Mm-hmm. We talked about maybe a little bit of cheese inside there. We didn't put cheese, but you could have. And then you take kind of square up the slice of
the triangle.
Triangle, yeah. And then fold that around it.
So it was a three ingredient of Wellington.
Yep. Yeah. And it, oh my gosh, turned out so good.
And so simple.
Oh yeah. You could doctor that thing up as
fancy as you want.
Fancy as you want. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you could go straight like traditional Wellington if you wanted. You could do like mushrooms and scallions and pate. And you could go down a
but that
big rabbit hole.
I think the way we did it, something that you could recreate in camp, you can recreate yeah. that just. And, you know, a lot of these places you go to, especially on some trips that we've been on recently, our hunting trips, you walk in, the only thing that's open on the way back is like the one gas station / bait store / mm-hmm. grocery store.
Slash ammo store, if there's ammo.
Which, oddly enough, all carry biscuits.
That's right.
Like canned biscuits.
That's right.
You're like, what? It's like beer, Gatorade, coffee drinks, energy drinks. Biscuits. Okay.
Yep. So, yeah, I think that's something you can find most anywhere, and that's easy to transport even if you could.
I think you could do it with biscuit dough, too. Uh-huh. I don't think it'd be a problem.
No,
be easy. The same way.
Yep,
it'd be
absolutely.
Probably really good. But, yeah, look for that. We did videos of both, so that'll be up on the Way We Hunt page. We'll also, they'll be at some point, make them over to the Harvest of Nature page as well.
That's right.
But I think those were two really great recipes. That I'm excited about.
And they weren't the traditional dove poppers.
No, they weren't traditional dove poppers. Well, if you've listened to me long enough, I'm not a big fan of dove poppers. I think there's a place for jalapenos and bacon and cream cheese and dove, but I'm not sure that they should commingle as much as they do. They're good, they're tasty, yes, but there's a whole other world of flavors out there.
That's right.
Like canned biscuits.
Like croissants.
Yeah.
That... Justin doesn't know how to open.
No, clearly not the skill I've mastered.
Cans are hard.
Cans of biscuits are difficult.
Let's see. I think we went through all the recipes, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, that's what we did tonight.
Yeah.
I like it when we're able to take something, one of our videos that we've done, and then link it to a food. Like, for instance, the turkey... tikka masala that we did. If you look back, the turkey that we used was the one that Emily also showed everybody how to completely deglove an entire turkey whole. How to completely peel back the feathers and skin on an entire turkey, and so you're just left with what a lot of people think traditionally is in a store. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of internet and YouTube searches going on around Thanksgiving. It's like, hey, how do I, you know, most people will just cut the breast out.
Yeah, how do you skin a whole turkey?
Yeah, how do you skin a turkey?
Yep.
And so it's a video we did
back in the spring,
and we were just able to bring that here, and so that's something I think we're going to try to do more of, as a way to just to kind of go full circle with a lot of the stuff.
That way, if people really want to, they can just watch hours of looped footage of...
That's right.
That would be great.
Turkey tiki masala, down to cleaning a turkey, or actually, I guess it would be vice versa. How do I clean a turkey to how do I cook turkey tiki masala?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was kind of fun to do. That was the first one we've done like that, and I had a lot of fun doing that.
It's awesome. Anything else you guys want to bring up?
We may be going bear hunting in June if Canada opens their borders. So
yep, we've got another bear hunt lined up. It's paid for. Everything's set. We're just waiting on the gate to open.
Yep. So
that would be a really great long video if we get to go.
Yeah, it'd be the same place as our last bear hunt video. We're going to be taking some really special friends up there with us from up at Two Hats Ranch and then down at 345 Ranch. So we got our Michigan friends that do a lot of veteran stuff with us, and then our Texas friends that do the same thing. We're kind of bringing them together to go on a big hunt together. So
nice.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun. We're looking forward to that. We just launched part three of our Two Hats Ranch 2020 Special Youth Challenge Hunt. So Emily went up there for a week. They take six kids.
I think they was six this year.
Six. Mm-hmm. And they take them on, basically, it's, if not the first time hunt, it's a very, they're very new to hunting. And all these kids up there have special challenges one way or another. Mm-hmm. And it's so cool just to go up there and hang out with them and talk to them and see the excitement on their face and, you know, them learn how to hunt, whatever. So very, very touching stuff.
Or kids that never thought that they would ever be able to hunt, and they have special equipment up there that allows these kids that, like, one of them was able to use, like, a mouthpiece to shoot his gun.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because he was unable to shoot his gun. So I think that was the first video that you've done, or have you done that one yet?
No, that one's coming up. Okay. We just released part three. We're trying to do them once every week or every couple weeks to allow each kid to kind of have their own moment, mm-hmm. you know. On the internets,
their spotlight.
On the interwebs, and then we're gonna do a big combined video after that. But Parker was our last one. Very special little guy, and that's the latest rendition. That's part three. So I think part four is launching here, probably this week. But y'all stay tuned for that. We're having a lot of fun doing those.
Sweet. Yeah, definitely go over and check that out. As we're winding down, last thoughts. Takeaways, alibis.
I'm just glad that you came up.
Yeah, I'm glad I got to come up too.
I haven't seen you in person since 05.
Yep. Since we, not to date ourselves, but since we graduated high school.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's been a long time. But it was good because I brought the family up. They got to meet you, hang out for a bit, pet your dog.
Yep.
Watch TV.
Cat screamed at them. I mean, it was a great time.
It was good. That's all right. My 10-month-old screamed at the cat and waved. So.
That was great. And he gave lots of verbal background noises. Yes. So
made an appearance in all the videos.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
So, Ryan, you got last thoughts, alibis?
No, just stay tuned for more, well, I guess, from us and you. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to be doing a lot of cool things in the future. We got some cool stuff lined up. Kind of kicked around the idea of tonight of some trips, maybe. Co-mingled trips. So,
mm-hmm.
collab. Going on there. So yeah, we're just really excited to kind of be part of the team, and thanks for having us on.
Yeah, absolutely. It was fun. Thanks for having me up and providing alligator and Dove Wellingtons who are delicious. And look forward to next time. I will say this, I should have plugged it at the front, but I'll talk about it now. We are still doing hats for reviews. So they've been slowly trickling in. Once I get back to home and we start back up on our regular podcast intervals, we will be reading more of those 5-star reviews and giving away hats. So all our podcast links now have the ability to hit a link that will take you to a page where you can rate the podcast. So you can rate it and leave a review. Those written reviews give you an opportunity to get a free Harvesting Nature hat. So we'll give you a shout out on the podcast, read your review, and then you pick the hat, we'll send it to you.
Which Ryan actually won one of them, and he's wearing it right now.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was him until after I ordered it, and I was like, wait, this address looks familiar. But no, he's wearing the camo dad hat, which is, you don't have to be a dad to wear, obviously. No,
it's a nice hat. I like it.
Yeah, it's super comfy. I have one, too. Yeah, go check those out. Go in the shop, use podcast20 for 20% off. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Be sure to smash that 5-star button. Tell us what we're doing wrong. Tell us what we're doing right. As always, go check out these guys on social media, The Way We Hunt. And when you're done checking out their social media profiles and YouTube channel, go over to the Harvesting Nature page. Give us a like, too. All right, guys. Thanks. Have a good night.